Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to the Eastern Airlines Radio Show. Thanks for being with us. We start, as you know, talking about Eastern Airlines every Monday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on your computer's internet dial, www.ealradioshow.com, or at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. You can also reach us on your telephone at home at 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. The hosts for the radio show are from many different locations: South, North, and Central Florida, North Carolina, New York, Pennsylvania, and on occasion, me when I'm in Martha's Vineyard. Before we introduce your host, our producer has an appropriate musical sound for this show. Mr. Producer, it's all yours.
Okay, thank you, Jim Hart, and all of our hosts tonight, which Jim will introduce you to right after we start our engines.
Clear.
Jim, back to you.
Okay. We've listened and watched for countless hours about one of the most mysterious airline events since Amelia Earhart's disappearance nearly seven decades ago. Our show tonight will be a tribute to America by an album selected by our producer. This is just one of the songs we have for you tonight.
Well, we will let that first song be introduced by Steve. Jim, tell us about our host tonight.
All right. The hosts for tonight's broadcast include Neil Holland, who is our producer and engineer in beautiful Ponte Vedra, Florida, near St. Augustine. Hi, Neil. Understand things are moving. In fact, you're moving out of the Jacksonville area. Tell us about it.
Well, I'm just moving right down the road from Jacksonville, Florida, Jim, to a location that any golfer in the world should know. It's the home of the World Golf Hall of Fame and the World Golf Village. It's halfway between Jacksonville, Florida, and St. Augustine. And we're moving into an adult community. I've finally graduated into the adult community at my late age in the late 70s. And so we decided that we would live in, check out what the older folks have been enjoying. So that's where we're moving. And Jacksonville right now is under cloudy skies, good temperature in the 60s. But everything is fine here, Jim.
Thank you, Neil. And now up to Roaring Gap, North Carolina, where Steve Thompson, I think, may be still sloshing in the snowbanks up there. Are you able to get out and about? And, of course, no golf yet, right, Steve?
Well, no, not yet, but we are scheduled to
open this coming Friday. That is providing that the snow has melted that we're forecast to get tomorrow. But today was a beautiful, calm wind day. The temperature was 40 degrees, and for that we are blessed.
You don't sweat in 40 degrees, do you, Steve?
No, I don't. Not at all.
Our official Yankee living in New York is George Jinn. And I know George thought everything was all over. But how are things on Long Island now, George? What's happening?
Well, would you believe it's supposed to snow again tomorrow, as you'll probably hear from John. And it might be spring, but apparently old man winter hasn't been shown the door yet. I don't know why, but this is the toughest winter I can remember. I'll just leave it right there because it's very depressing.
I understand that most of New York has run out of salt for the roadways, and we hope that you're able to weather this new storm without the salt. Chuck Albright, Chuck is in the land of golf. Tell us how many golf courses there are in your area in the center of Florida in what they call the villages, Chuck.
We have 53 beautiful golf courses. Right now it's 66 degrees, going to go down to 61 tonight, partly cloudy. They say a little light rain early in the morning. We've been so crowded with you guys, the snowbirds coming down here. It's very difficult to get a time out on these golf courses, even though we have 52 of them. We're hoping that that snow's going to stop and these snowbirds will want to go home. Take it away.
Thank you, Chuck. And now from beautiful Boca Raton, where they never have problems with snow, just down the south of us here in West Palm Beach, where I live, is Cecile Intriago. Cecile, how are things in Boca right now?
Things are great. The temperature is 70. Yesterday it was 90. But we're getting a cold front this evening. It's going to be in the 60s.
Wow.
So I got to get the coat out.
Hey, Cecile?
John Roos.
Hey, Cecile,
I'll tell you, that's
minute,
where you might want to go to play some golf, up in the Philly area, and our travel expert. How's that new website for travel coming along?
I can't
talk over. It's up and running, Jim, and I've got the snow shovel and the broom still in the back of my car. I hope the snow goes out to sea, but they say it's going to graze us, and I think George will probably feel the brunt of it, and then up through New England. But travel website's been up and running, and there's deals galore to everywhere in the world, cruises, river tours, hotels, whatever. So all you need to do is go to www.fly-eastern.com, and you'll find all the best deals in the world right there in front of you.
Thank you, John. For your benefit, John, and for the rest of our hosts, I received a telephone call from EARA Miami this week. They had heard that we were thinking about having a group of Eastern Airlines employees on the first flight to San Juan. Their concern is that once we break this news, that they will be inundated with telephone calls from all over the system. So we have got to be careful how we break this announcement.
Right.
Okay, now, that
they can call me if they
want
to.
Yes, John. Well, we'll make sure we add that into whatever we do. And now that leaves me, Jim Hart, here in West Palm Beach, Florida, where the weather today is cloudy and rainy. Thank goodness we need the rain. We have too many brush fires in the area. And so we're hoping that this 2 days of rain will allay our fears in that area. Neil?
Well, before we talk about our program tonight, I still want to give Cecile time to give a plug for her real estate company, because I know there's a lot of Northerners. Hey, George. Hey, John. Listen up here, because Cecile has got the house of your dreams right there in Boca, right, Cecile?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we just went under contract today. I can't disclose the price, but It's near 500,000. It's a penthouse overlooking the ocean and overlooking the intracoastal, and it's a cash buyer. And we have a nice little condominium that you can walk to the beach that's in below 200,000. So call RE/MAX Advantage Plus, Cecile Entriago, and my number is 954-415-1408. And I'm on the website, right, Neil?
Yeah, and I need a very nice picture of you. Of course, if you can send me, it has to be an image. I'd like to put that on our website, Cecile, along with a small plug about your real estate company. We'll certainly be happy to add it to our website. And anyone listening to our show tonight that would like to be a sponsor and plug your company, we'd be more than happy to put it on our website. By the way, right now we are up to 770 members on the website. And, of course, it's called the EALRadioShow.com. You can go there and sign up, and you can become a member. Now, we have received over the past couple of weeks some donations. And, of course, folks, donations help us keep Eastern Airlines' name on the air and on the website. And, of course, we that's our hope, and that's the purpose of this show is to continue the legacy of the great airlines, of Eastern Airlines. And hopefully people, when the new Eastern Airlines starts its engines, will remember Eastern Airlines as the first-class world airlines. And so I appreciate any donations that you might want to throw our way. You can do it right there on the website. But thanks a lot, Cecile, real estate available. And anyone listening want to come down to South Florida, then Cecile is the one to turn to. You know, at the last 2 weeks,
Excuse me, Neil, but I want to remind everybody that I take care of South Florida, and you, Neil, take care of North Florida as a realtor. So
okay.
What is the name of your company?
St. John's Realty Group, and we'll do that next time, okay, in the World Golf Village is where we're located. As I mentioned, in the past 2 weeks, we have centered listening on the TV and radio. The news has centered on the disappearance of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, and we have also talked about this subject in our past two shows. But we thought we would focus on how great this country is, the country we live in and has been to us living here and to the world community. So I've decided that I would listen to some music that rings home right here in America. And I think you'll enjoy the very last song that we have selected for you tonight, because it's about our own airline, Eastern Airlines, and what they contributed back in 1976. I've always enjoyed listening to a brand of music that was played and sung by Oscar Brand. If you can remember back in World War II, he was an orchestra leader and songwriter, and most of his songs were Irish ballads, songs about World War II, the Navy, rowdy drinking and barroom songs. That was his signature. But I found his portrayal of America songs, especially meaningful to me. And I hope you will agree and enjoy these selected tonight, because they're from an album that he put out many years ago. Steve, will you start our program tonight?
Yes, Neil, thank you. Now, the many cities and people served by Eastern Airlines in this state is why we chose this as our first in the Oscar Brand album.
She's sweet as rose of color, this fellow ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your fairest, they are sing of rose. But the yellow rose of Texas beats the bells of Tennessee. There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna see. Nobody ever knew her
cried so when I left her. It like to broke her heart. And if we ever meet again, we two will never part. She's the sweetest rose of color this fellow ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your fairest, they are saying of Rosalie. But the yellow rose of Texas beats the bells of Tennessee. Where the Rio Grande is glowing, the stars were shining bright. We strolled along the river on a quiet summer night. She thinks if I remember when we parted long ago, I promised to come back again and not to leave her so. She's the sweetest rose of color this fellow ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your fairest, they are saying of Rosalie. But the yellow rose of Texas beats the bells of
Hey, folks, I'd like to ask one question out there from our host. Does anyone remember all of the cities that Eastern Airlines served throughout the great state of Texas?
Oh, yes.
All of them.
Well, tell me one.
Dallas, Fort Worth, and Dallas, Fort...
Okay.
Houston.
Houston.
San Antonio.
Right. San Antonio?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, come on. Come on.
Corpus Christi.
Corpus Christi, yes.
Yep, you're right. More. Yep.
Yeah.
Dallas, Fort...
Beaumont, Port Arthur.
Beaumont, Port Arthur. Yes, we did.
Yeah.
How about way down south, way down the south?
I believe also Galveston.
Galveston, that's right, we did. How about
yep.
Brownsville, Texas?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was gonna...
So, okay, we've got Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Corpus Christi, Brownsville, El Paso, Beaumont, Port Arthur, and Galveston. Yeah, I think those were the cities that Eastern served in the Yellow Rose of Texas. Cecile, what's our next
Fantastic.
Number?
The roots of Eastern Airlines carried it throughout the land of Dixie. Dixie is usually thought to include the states of the Confederacy, but where the term comes from, nobody knows for sure. Here are the three leading theories. Number one, before the Civil War, the Citizens Bank of Louisiana, located in New Orleans, issued $10 notes that bore the Creole French word Dix 10 on one side. These notes were known as Dixies, and the South came to be known as the Land of Dixies. The second suggestion is the term comes from the Dixon in Mason-Dixon line, the famous pre-Revolutionary War surveyors line that separated Maryland and Pennsylvania. And the third theory is it comes from Dixie's land, Dixie supposedly being a kindly slave owner on Manhattan Island, of all places. Dixie's regiment was supposedly so enlightened that for slaves his plantation came to symbolize earthly paradise. Sounds ridiculous, but the story was widely told in the years just after the Civil War. The trouble with all these explanations is that there are no published citations of the word prior to the appearance of Daniel Emmett's song, Dixie, in 1859. Enjoy Oscar Brand's rendition.
Well, I wish I was in the land of cotton, old times there and not forgotten. Look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
Dixieland,
Dixieland,
in Dixieland where I was born.
Early on one frosty morning, look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
Dixieland.
Dixieland.
Then I wish I was in Dixie, hooray, hooray. In Dixieland I'll take my stand to live and die in Dixie.
Away,
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 away
down south in Dixie.
Away,
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 away
down south in Dixie. Makes you fatter, a little bit fatter. Look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
Dixieland.
Dixieland.
When you hoe it down and scratch your gravel, to Dixieland I'm bound to travel. Look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
look away,
Dixieland.
Dixieland.
And I wish I was in Dixie, hooray, hooray. In Dixieland I'll take my stand to live and die in Dixie.
Away,
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 away
down south in Dixie.
Away.
Performed on February 6, 1906, the play's opening night at the Herald Square Theater in New York City. Your Grand Old Flag quickly became the first song from a musical to sell over a million copies of sheet music. The title and the first lyrics came from someone Cohen once met. The original lyrics for this piano, George M. Cohen favorite, as George later explained, from an encounter he had with a Civil War veteran who fought at Gettysburg. The two men found themselves next to each other, and Cohan noticed the vet held carefully a folded but ragged old flag. The man reported when he turned to Cohan and said, "She's a grand old rag." Cohan thought it was a great line and originally named the tune, "You're a Grand Old Rag." So many groups and individuals objected to the flag being referred to as a rag, however, and he gave them what they wanted and switched the words, renaming the song, "You're a Grand Old Flag." Neil?
heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand, keep your eye on the grand, keep your eye.
Traditions place this particular song's origin in a pre-Revolutionary War song originally sung by British military officers in order to mock the disheveled, disorganized colonial Yankees with whom they served in the French and Indian War. It's believed that the tune comes from the nursery rhyme called Lucy Lockett. One version of the Yankee Doodle lyrics is generally attributed to Dr. Richard Schuckburg, a British Army surgeon. According to one story, Schuckburg wrote the song after seeing the appearance of colonial troops under Colonel Thomas Fitch, the fifth, the son of Connecticut Governor Thomas Fitch.
Just to ride the ponies, I am a Yankee Doodle, I am a Yankee Doodle, I am that Yankee Doodle boy.
More American than cornflakes and Eastern Airlines. Our next song brings out a few things that symbolizes the American way. As you listen, you may ask yourself, what is my own personal experience that brings thoughts that represents being American? Well, here is a sampling as recorded in these songs.
Baseball, I am, I am, I am. What's more
Of a neighbor from our borders, Canada offers his thoughts about America by reminding the world of how generous and compassionate this great country is in the world today. Even though it was written in the 1970s, it is true, still very, very true today.
On June the 5th, 1973, during his broadcast over CFRB Toronto, Mr. Gordon Sinclair, one of Canada's most respected broadcasters, had some thoughts concerning his American neighbors. These are his words. The United States dollar has taken another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% from 1971. And this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the earth. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did, that's who. They've helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottom land of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent Britain and Italy, were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up. And their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. I was there. I saw it. When distant cities are hit by earthquakes, it is the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. Well, so far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pumped billions of dollars into discouraged countries. And now newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, warmongering Americans. I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplanes. So come on, let's hear it. Does any other country in the world have a plane to equal the Boeing Jumbo Jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or a woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy, you get radios. You talk about German technocracy, and you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy, and you find men on the moon, not once, but several times, and safely home again. You talk about scandals. And the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even their draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They are here on our streets in Toronto, most of them. And unless they are breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from mom and dad at home to spend here in Canada. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who could blame them if they set to hell with the rest of the world? Let somebody else build or repair foreign dams. Or design foreign buildings that won't shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France, Germany, and India were breaking down through age, It was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Both are still broke. I can name you 5,000 times when the Americans raced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name me even one time when someone else raced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone, and I'm one Canadian who is damn tired of hearing them kicked around. They'll come out of this thing with their flag high. And when they do, they are entitled to thumb their nose at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these. And another thing. Recently, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans that it was broke. This year's disasters, and the year less than half over, has taken it all. And nobody, but nobody, has helped.
Need we say more? Need we say more?
That is
more?
A beautiful,
yes.
Beautiful song.
We will say more at the end of this, just two or three more songs that we'll play, and we'll give you our thoughts tonight. Cecile, you've got another song that you would like to introduce.
Rock of Ages is a popular Christian hymn by the Reverend Augustus Montague Toplady, written in 1763 and first published in the Gospel Magazine in 1775. Traditionally, it is held that Toplady drew his inspiration from an incident in the Gorge of Burrington Combe in the Mendip Hills in England. Toplady, a preacher in the nearby village of Blangden, was traveling along the gorge when he was caught in a storm. Finding shelter in a gap in the gorge, he was struck by the title and scribbled down the initial lyrics on a playing card. The fissure that is believed to have sheltered Toplady is now marked as the Rock of Ages. Even though it did not find its origin in America, we just thought you might want to hear this beautiful rendition.
Rock of Ages, cleft for me, let me
at the age of 36, Catherine Lee Bates, an English professor at Wellesley College, had taken a train trip to Colorado Springs, Colorado, to teach a short summer school session at Colorado College. Several of the sights on her trip inspired her. and they found their way into her poem, including the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, the White City, with its promise of the future contained within its alabaster buildings, the wheat fields of America's heartland, Kansas, through which her train was riding on July 16th, and the majestic view of the Great Plains from high atop Zevulun's Pikes Peak. On the pinnacle of that mountain, the words of her poem started to come to her, and she wrote them down upon returning to her hotel at the original Antlers Hotel. The poem was initially published 2 years later in the Congressionalist to commemorate the 4th of July. It quickly caught the public's fancy. Amended versions were published in 1904 and 1913.
God Bless America is an American patriotic song written by Irving Berlin in 1918 and revised by him in 1938. The later version was notably recorded by Kate Smith, becoming her signature song. God Bless America takes the form of a prayer. The intro lyrics, as we raise our voices in solemn prayer, for God's blessing and peace for the nation, stand beside her and guide her through the night. Neil?
I remember that as the unofficial anthem of the Philadelphia Flyers during the 1970s. If you're like some of us that sing songs by stomping a feet to the floor to songs that you have heard tonight, we hope you enjoyed the time we set aside this evening for remembering how great America truly is. It shouldn't have to be the 4th of July, Memorial Day, or other patriotic days set aside to remember how fortunate we are, sons and daughters of America. We have one more message about America that was delivered in an Eastern Airlines TV commercial during the celebration of America's independence. Do you remember this?
Eastern Airlines serves 26 of our 50 United States. But today, we look beyond assigned flight patterns, and we see the miracle that is America. Her names are written on the land, and the peoples who wrote them are diverse as the land itself. Polynesian mariners landed on the shores of this island from their outrigger canoes and called it Hawaii. The Spanish found this stretch of coastline lovely and named it the Jewel, La Jolla. An Indian tribe cut this name with the flint tip of a feathered shaft, Mojave. In the shadows of the Rockies, our conscience named a settlement Fair Play. Scandinavian mythology swept a plateau that rims the Grand Canyon and called it Valhalla. The French embraced the Mississippi with a parish, and they called it Baton Rouge. Tilling this Pennsylvania farmland, German settlers named it Heidelberg. The English settled Cape Cod and called the county Barnstable. E pluribus unum. One from many. This is the miracle we celebrate today. One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We celebrate not the final achievement, for there is much still to be achieved. We celebrate the promise, the progress, the hope. Eastern Airlines.
What a show tonight, folks. And if it didn't stir your heart as far as your love for your country and the love for the family that we call Eastern Airlines, I don't know what would do it, folks. You know, we're so fortunate in this country to be, like we said earlier, sons and daughters of this country. Maybe not by birth, but coming here from other countries and naturalized. So tonight we'd like to continue our discussion about America and some of the events that that have happened in the last few weeks, and some of the things that bring pride, as far as I'm concerned, to me, about my company, Eastern Airlines, and what we did. You know, one of the statements was that was mentioned tonight that this country is the least, I think it was in the Americans that the Canadian delivered on our show tonight. We are the least appreciated people on earth. We're the least appreciated people on earth. And it seems to be that way.
We should stop supporting them.
We're the ones that bail everybody else out.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's been that way for the last 50, 60 years. We bailed the world out in World War I, World War II, Vietnam, Iraq,
Korea.
Iran, all those places.
Yep.
We bailed them out.
And no one
appreciates
them.
What do we get?
Which one said thank you?
Cecile, let's go by first here. I want to call the name. Cecile, you've got a comment.
Okay, yes. I believe I'm the only host, correct me if I'm wrong, that was born outside of the United States. I was born in Ecuador, and I can tell you, having visited Ecuador and all the countries in South America or abroad, when you come here, you really appreciate the United States. It's such a great, best country. And so I'm so glad when my father sent me when I was three to come to the United States and live here in the greatest country of all. And I've got to tell you, Eastern Airlines helped the sister city of Miami by giving their the first aid kits that were outdated. They contributed to Bogota, Colombia, the sister city. So Eastern Airlines was part in helping South America and Bogota, Colombia. But I can tell you, having born outside of the United States, there is no country like the United States of America, and that's why everybody tries to immigrate here, because it is the best in the world.
Wonderful, Cecile. Wonderful comment. Chuck, you were next. I think I heard your voice.
Yeah, well, I was kind of like the rest of the guys. You see, over the years, I think it goes back farther than 50 years that we have helped other countries in their time of need, whether in a war effort or whether it was in a disaster effort. And you look around, we're all over the age of 50, so we look around and we kind of feel, well, how come when we had these devastating floods or the fires out west or hurricanes down in the Florida sector, or even in Louisiana, how come these other countries didn't send a blanket or two to help us out? Because, you know, I think they just expect it from us. And sometimes I wonder if we're too good, but on other times I feel that it is our responsibility to a certain extent to help others. And maybe sometime that in the future these countries are going to realize that, you know, the United States needs help, too.
Very good, Chuck.
Neil?
Yes, Steve?
In doing some research about knowing I was going to introduce the Yellow Rose of Texas, I did a little bit of research into Texas, and I ran across a survey that one of the highly respected universities located in Texas put out about the ranking the presidents, all 44 presidents of the United States, and it came from Texas A&M. And from a total of 44 U.S. presidents, Obama has been ranked the fifth best according to a study completed at Texas A&M University. Now, the public relations office there released this statement: after only 5 years in office, Americans have rated President Obama as the fifth best president in U.S. history.
Oh.
Now, here are the results according to Texas A&M. Number one was Reagan and Lincoln, that were tied for first. Number two, 17 presidents were tied for second. And number three, 23 other presidents were tied for third. And Jimmy Carter came in fourth. And Obama was fifth.
Well, okay. I think we can count the presidents and hear the point of that the delivery that you just made, Steve. I would like to focus on something that I've heard the last 2 weeks or more, getting a little bit off of our subject tonight, but our discussion about the last 2.5 weeks that we've heard this Malaysian aircraft accident, the horrific tragedy that apparently has been disclosed that it did go down into the South Indian Sea. And the thing that bothered me after listening to many, many hours of television and radio about what was going on as far as trying to solve the mystery of what happened to that airplane. We had expert witnesses that were marched before the public on television and radio that expressed their opinion, and that's fine because we all had our opinion, and perhaps our opinions changed over the 2.5 weeks. But for some of these experts to get up and are to be on television, face the public on radio, to tell some of the things that perhaps a future terrorist or hijacker might be interested in, such as the emergency frequency or emergency codes that are used by the pilots in the airplane that are in that situation, that they have been instructed to squawk. We call it squawk, which means to tune in a certain transponder code number. And you're not going to hear it tonight on this show, but you heard it over the many, many hours that we have listened in the past 2.5 weeks. So we're not going to mention that code because I still, as a pilot, remember that's a code that I don't want to give to anyone other than a pilot, than maybe an instructor would say, okay, if you are hijacked, this is what you select on your transponder. Or if you lose communications, this is the code that you select for an emergency communications failure. And so, or either when we taxi, this is what you do to show the control tower that you are under a hijack situation. But a lot of these were discussed on the air with millions and millions of people listening to what was said. And I just don't think that that should have been done. Well, what say the rest of our hosts? Steve, you being a pilot, what do you think?
And John, oh, I agree. And that was when we first learned of these codes, we were impressed, or it was impressed upon us, the importance of keeping these codes secret.
Yeah.
And as you say, we did not discuss these codes with anybody outside our own cockpit or on other pilots.
Yeah, yeah. John, your thoughts?
Well, Neil, I think we need to change the codes.
Yeah, I think so.
We need to change the codes, and we need to not disclose them to anyone.
Right.
I mean, it's almost sacrilegious to blare that information out to the general public and give the terrorists a manual to operate with.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how outraged I am that stuff was disclosed on the internet and everywhere else in the world. And in this day and age, with modern communications the way they are, there still should be some things that are discreet, and we need to change the codes. Period.
Yeah, I think you're right. I believe you're right. I don't know who we can get that message to, perhaps to our congressperson or our senator, and say, hey, you know, we've just revealed the game plan to any future terrorist or hijacker wanting to take over an airplane. We've just revealed in the last 2.5 weeks the way to put the plan together, it seems to me.
Yep.
I agree.
Mia, shut it down right now.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we let someone know, Neil? Someone in the federal government, shouldn't we let them know?
Well,
I'm sure the FAA is working on it, but, you know, I mean, that's absurd. To throw out that information is, like I said, sacrilegious.
Well, it's kind of like giving – yes, Cecile?
Having worked in security, I hate to pop everybody's bubble, but I'm sure a terrorist already probably knew those codes or whatever you all know. I'm sure they're a step ahead of us, so we just have to stay one step ahead of them by security at the airport, more strict, and whatever we have to do. And I'm sure our government is – the FAA is on top of it, but I'm sure it's, I don't know what the codes were, but I'm sure a terrorist can still, unfortunately, do what they're going to do even without the code.
Well, you're probably right.
Good observation.
Yeah.
So make it tougher.
Yeah, I don't know. The codes have been around traditionally for, golly, back in as early as the 50s, I remember flying small airplanes when we first got transponders. I think the earliest I can remember as to having to squawk a code and remembering that emergency frequency or emergency squawk code and the emergency frequency, which was a VHF frequency, I think I learned that back in the late 50s. Steve, you probably
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it hasn't changed over the years, but by golly, now millions and millions of people now know what that code is. And so Hollywood probably is the next step. We'll start seeing movies come out that probably will result in this tragedy. And an additional information will be revealed to those people that since this perhaps was a,
it should be made classified information.
One other point. I hate to bring this up, but on 9/11, if they would have filed the profile, those hijackers would have never gotten on board. And the profile was known to the ticket personnel and everybody. And unfortunately, I bet on this Malaysian crash, they probably used the same profile. It just, we've got to be more like Israel. Whatever they're doing it right.
Yeah.
I know it takes longer to board a plane, but they follow stricter rules.
Well, we've exceeded our hour, but we're going into our second hour, so we're not going to be here an hour. But I want to just mention a couple of more things before we close our show out. Did any of you hear how many airplanes or how many ships Russia sent to this mission of trying to?
Zero.
I hear zero. Do I hear one, two, three?
None.
Okay.
Zero.
That's very emphatic. None. Zero. Yes, Russia. And the situation now.
So that tells you something.
Yeah, that tells you something. It certainly does. That when tragedies around the world happen, like recently, who does the world turn to?
The U.S.
America.
America. It turns to America.
Right.
And why should we, as America, diminish our status of being the humanitarian nation of the world?
We should.
Because that's what we've been. No other country has ever participated in world affairs as much as America has. Steve, I think you wanted
to... But we should be recognized.
Yeah. Well, you know, how do we recognize, Jim? You just brought up an interesting point. How do we recognize this? And our feelings tonight that all of us have shared, we've listened to beautiful American songs and what it means to us, and we've talked about what happened in the last 2.5 weeks. But how do we get the message? How do we get our thoughts about the recent events and what the future events will unfold? Because
I think the best way, Neil, is to stay away and not offer all of this stuff that we've been offering over the years. Hold back. And unfortunately, it will not endear us to people who have been looking toward us for many, many years. I think we ought to just lay back and say, okay, guys, fend for yourself or other countries. Help these folks out. We're through. We're finished.
Well,
we've always enjoyed a leadership position in the world, and I think we need to maintain that leadership position. The problem is that, you know, the world has to recognize it. And if the world doesn't want to recognize it, then, yeah, I agree with Jim, then just sit back and relax and let them kill each other.
Yeah. We have a caller that is from area code 770. Any comments from this area code you'd like to talk and contribute or make a comment? Area code 770.
Neil,
I would just have to second that.
Hey, just a minute, Steve.
Gentleman.
Steve, go ahead. Is it Sonny?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
Hey, Sonny.
I just have
evening.
To second the comments there that maybe we've been into everybody's bailiwick just too long and let them handle their own affairs, and then we'll go in there only when we need to with one airplane.
You got it.
And let them handle their own problems. You know, we lost 600,000 people in our Civil War. Nobody's come close to that yet, so just let them go at it. Sorry, I have to.
Agreed.
Yeah. Neil, this is Steve. I have another commitment that I must attend to right now. So thanks, everybody, and I will see you next Monday night.
Okay, Steve. Are you still on, Neil? Hello?
Neil? Jim, it's you and
I. Still? Oh, who's this, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim Hart here, John. I've been all day today in the hospital with my wife. I just came home in time to be on the show. Mm-hmm. We have a problem with her white blood cells. It may be a leukemia situation.
Mm.
And I've got to leave the program right now myself.
Okay.
Yeah. Any questions?
My better prayers are with you, Jim.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Neil, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Do we hear
Neil?
Champagne music?
Well, let's see if we can strike up the...
I can sign off, Neil.
Lawrence Welk. Just a minute. Hang on a second. Let me see if I can get Lawrence Welk to play the tune one more time for us. Jim, that's your cue.
Yep, I hear our champagne music in the background, so we must bring this show to a close this evening. From all of our hosts, it's been great being with you tonight, and we hope you'll continue listening to the voice of Eastern Airlines Radio throughout the year. And from all of us here at the EAL Radio Show, until next week, keep the blue side up. Have plenty of airspeed and plenty of altitude, and may all of your landings be grease jobs. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, from the Eastern
Good night.
Family.
Good night,
Good night
Eastern.
Eastern family.
Good night, and our prayers with all the families in Malaysia.
Good night.